Blog Talk Radio.
Our community have become toxic waste. And those in high places are planning to remove the toxic waste. And while we flitter and live this frivolous, foolish life, seeking pleasure from our bodies and pleasure from the bodies of others, and seeking to be famous and wealthy in this world, to be used by the power to make our people think that if you go to school and work hard, you too can be successful. That's a lie. I don't give a damn how many of you go to school and work hard. They select a few out of the mass to deceive the rest that this house is not your house. And you are going to have to think about a house of your own, because white America, listen to me good, man, cannot support you any longer. White America cannot give jobs to her millions of unemployed, much less ours. Did you hear me? Elijah Muhammad told us in the 60s we should pool our resources and get farmland, because there is no freedom without land. You remember those teachings? He said that the time of separation had come, and that we are going to have to think about building a nation of our own. You, in the 60s, you were ready to say it's nation time. You don't say that no more, because you have been deceived into thinking that inclusion into this is your salvation. This that you want to be included in has no future. None.
Greetings and assalamu alaikum. Welcome to tonight's edition of the Time to Lead Blog Talk Radio Show. How we're moving from a cash-based society to a cashless society affect our community. In building our communities, in building separate societies, in building towards separate states that are sovereign, that we control and we govern and that we economize, we have to look at the trends. We have to look at how money is transmitted and what does it mean. We can't just go into a void. Assalamu alaikum, I am back now. Sister Andrea? Okay, so let's see if we can get Brother Terrence. Brother Terrence, if you are on the line, if you could go ahead and press the 1 on your dial. Press the 1 on your dial, Brother Terrence. Sister Andrea.
Yes, can you hear me now?
I can. I'm sorry, I had dropped out. I'm using a different phone, and apparently I'm having trouble with it. And so, Brother Terrence, I think I see him. I'm going to bring him in.
All right, thank you.
Brother Terrence?
Call back in.
Hello?
Yes. Okay, can you hear me? Yes.
Hey.
Can you hear me? Okay.
Yes,
how
good
are
afternoon.
You? Good evening.
Good evening. I'm doing well.
Excellent. Thank you so much for coming on to share this information with us. We have on, and I'm going to let you tell a little bit about who you are. From my understanding, you told me that you're the extension agent for Macon and Montgomery County, Alabama. Now, you're at Tuskegee University? Or?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Okay, I'm going to let you take over from there and talk about, you know, what you do and share the information I heard on the program that you talked about, what we need to think about, what we need to do as this society is going from a cash to cashless society.
Okay. Good evening, everyone. My name is Terrence Jackson. I'm the Regional Agriculture and Natural Resource Agent for Macon and Montgomery County in Alabama. I'm a farm boy from Tuskegee. I grew up on a farm, E&E Family Farm, established in 2002. Small farm. We had 13 horses, and we had a large garden that we managed. I grew up, born and raised in Tuskegee. I started working with the university in an internship program at the age of 13 until now. So I only had one other job, and that's for like a month, working in a factory. But other than that, from age 13 to 27, I've strictly been into agriculture, research agriculture. So I've been working with professors on different research projects and there's different research proposals and different things until I got this job last year as the extension agent. What a cashless society look like to me is basically a society that is sustainable, that doesn't is it putting its morals and values at risk of anything. So I look at the way we do things now as a monocrop style, kind of like what many farmers do in America. And just like those resources, they are strictly for a certain thing. That's just basically like we are. We're boxing everybody in into this box and want everybody to be this one thing. If you're a farmer, then typically you're looked at, you have a couple of 100 acres and you can go and plant soybean or corn or, you know, but what does that farm, what happens to that farm over a couple of years, a couple of decades? The soybean and that corn isn't as healthy as it did in the first five because they're, all the nutrients and everything is gone. So you got to add more synthetic fertilizer and pesticides to combat the pests and everything. So now my biggest thing is we got to diversify. And that's not only with farming, that's with our communities also. The way I look at things, the way I analyze things is always through an agricultural lens. I'm always referencing life for these plants and these cycles that the plants go through to the cycles and that we go through as human beings. Because I don't feel like we are above any other being. We're on the same level playing field. So we have to be put in an environment where we can thrive. You wouldn't put onions and tomatoes, you know, right in the same pot because, you know, eventually that is not going to be good for the tomato. But you will put it in another bed, you know. You will put your kale and your tomatoes together maybe because neither one of those, both of those are your tomatoes or your bell pepper because both of those are helping each other and they're not risking or putting their morals and values at stake to become the best thing that they can be. So that's how we got to do with our communities. We got to be more diverse. We got to be more willing to go out and do the things that many of us looked at down upon in our communities. Agriculture is looked at as slave work, and that's the main image that I'm trying to get away from with the youth because this. Everything you do is involved in agriculture. So with that being said, we got to take a different approach. We have to sell being a farmer. is only, you know, so many of us around. We are like that lost gem, you know. Most people never met a farmer in their life, and to see a black farmer, it blows most people's minds. So you got to sell that. You got to wear that on your back. You got to make sure that you put that out there differently from everybody else. Most of our farmers are small farmers, so you got to do a different approach. So one of our biggest issues is we don't have access to land. Many farmers or many people that do want to get into farming or many people that do have farming, they always go without. So many of the farmers are older who can't do as much as the work but have the land, or the younger people have the, you know, the drive and the energy to go out and do the work but don't have the land. So one way to easily eliminate and cure a large amount of this is intergenerational management or intergenerational, I would say, health right now. So building those relationships between those generations so you can build those resources, because right now it is a big gap. Many of the elder farmers or many of the elders think that we are entitled and things should come to us easy and all of that. And we just feel like that nobody is really listening to us, or when they do listen to us, they feed us lies, and it's a lot of distrust. So we as a community got to build that, you know, that trust up. So that's just building relationships, you know, talking to each other, telling us how it was when you was a kid. I reference this as sitting on Granny's porch, pulling purple hull peas, or you know, plugging purple hull peas, because that's what I used to do with my grandma and my granddad when they would sit down, and I'd be like, you know, Granny, how was it on the farm when you was a kid, or you know, when y'all had the hog farm, or when y'all, you know, used to work with Mr. Smith, or you know, just different things. So just making sure that they have those conversations. A lot of this is just built on identifying or putting your entire identity into what you're doing. Honestly, farming, everything is about, it's more about personality now. I look at it as almost being like a wrestler, a superhero. That's how I look at black farmers. What makes them different? What are their superpowers? What are their weaknesses? What sets them apart? So that's my biggest thing. So if I see a black farmer and I go to his farm, it should be a direct representation of him. You're a farmer. The land is just land, just like a canvas. A canvas would not be a painting without an artist. So the farmer is the artist, so we have to make sure that we embrace agriculture, and we make sure we put that our paintbrush on that canvas and make sure that it's seen, that those stories are told, that our voices are heard. Some easy ways to directly impact a cashless society is basically bartering, making sure you're trading with people. A lot of people don't trade no more. They just want the money. So if you can do an even trade, or, you know, you can come to a farmer or a gardener's garden and help them, and they give you food, or, you know, you do a seed swap, is a great way that you can to the variety and the diversity to your farm, to your clients, making sure that they're getting what they want. So like we had went to Washington, D.C. and heard about a lemon cucumber that we never heard of before, but we got a couple seeds from them, and that started a great relationship. And it went on to now this summer we had an internship student from Washington, D.C. That worked with the organization called Hustlers to Harvest. And Hustlers to Harvest basically an organization where men coming out of prison, and they get introduced to the community through agriculture. So that is recycling old material, building beds, that's building gardens, cleaning up playgrounds, and building peaceful spaces. So that's one of the biggest things in the cashless society. As we see, especially in a pandemic, there aren't many places that you can go to right now, especially in our communities, that's safe and that's a place of peace. But in a garden or on a farm, that's literally, that's all that's there is living, breathing organisms. Small as you can see with a microscope, and big as walking around, you know, cattle on your farm, is all living, breathing, just life. And everything, your farm, everything is a direct representation of life. And, yeah, I know that was a lot. I was trying to make sure I get everything, you know, into one from all the questions and stuff. But I would just say cashless society is basically, you know, a reinvention. This is the time where our people can not reinvent themselves, actually show who we really are, like what is embedded in our DNA, you know, show them why we are special. Everybody's seen, you know, they've been capitalizing on, you know, our specialties, our superpowers for a very long time. But it's time for us to do that now. It's time for us to take a strong hold on our communities. And I think agriculture is a great way to do that. What better way of giving back or showing a trade than farming? You're literally showing children to elders how to, you know, you're giving a life. That's the only thing it is. You're seeing this seed sprout, and you're raising that seed, and that seed is giving something back to you. So, like I said, I look at everything through an agricultural lens. So, in communities, it's the same thing. Like, I can look at myself as just like a piece of a kale transplant. If I put that kale transplant out in a very fertile soil, high in organic matter, microbiology, is really been fed great. It's got a good environment. That kale is going to grow up to be healthy and strong. And when, you know, that kale is eating, that's what it's giving. It's giving off nutrition. But in our communities, you know what I'm saying, we can be a nice, healthy kale straight from a nursery. But if you plant us in this environment, you know, how will we turn out? Many of us will strive. Many of us will, you know, go on to be big, you know, and healthy. Some of us may not, because of the environments that we are in, because of some of the things that are going on. But, you know, just like anything else, that environment can be, you know, treated. It can be cleaned. It can be not really clean. I don't want to say clean, because our environments aren't dirty. It don't have the resources. That's what I'm saying. So basically, you can look at it just like monocropping. You know, you've been having, you want every, just all of this corn, 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 and then you come introduce some pest corn, and it totally wipes out all of your corn. In our community, the same thing. We don't have resources, no resources. So we got to put you're going to put synthetic water down. Instead of giving us actual justice, you're going to give us some, you know, a Black Lives Matter sign in the road, instead of us putting in policies down to combat the things that we are doing. So you're going to go out and put synthetic pesticides and herbicides to temporarily fix the problem, knowing that, you know, you're going to have that problem again. Or you're going to go and add a diversity and resources. You're going to go out there and see what problem you're having, what plants can you introduce to, you know, combat that issue. You can introduce a certain plant to combat, you know, a certain pest, and you can get two for one. You can be getting some from the plant that you're using for the pest, and you can also be getting the actual plant that you planted for the, you know, for consumption or for you to sell. So you just got to add diversity. Diversity is always going to create sustainability. And I'm not saying as diversity as in, you know, as referencing to our communities. I'm not saying diversity as in people. I'm talking diversity as in resources. yes, people will always bring new experiences, new everything. But I believe that our communities can be held and ran and be kept safe by us. So they're just adding different resources, organic resources, regenerative resources, reusable resources, you know, not something synthetic that's going to just wash away in a couple, you know, a year or two, and then we'll be back to square one looking for it again, you know, something that is sustainable, something that we can always go back to, you know, great resources. So that's what I really feel like a cashless society is. It's more than just spending money. It's reimagining what agriculture is. It's reimagining what the Black community is and what those two look like together. And we are all representation of life and species. So I would just say everybody, you know, that's like I said, I try to keep everything kind of small. I know that was a lot. Do you have any questions?
It's, you know, in listening to you, one of the things that I pulled out of that is that being able to barter, having skills, and just looking at and see, because I've been in the more of an urban, I'm in a rural area, but I look around and the skill set is something that I see is missing. So, so many young people and older people, I don't see a lot of older people that have skills in order to, you know, do some of those things. So, there's a lot of work that has to be done. I understand, and I definitely believe in bartering, but, you know, at this point, many times we don't have anything to barter with. We aren't thinking on that level. So, you know, we've got to, you know, it seems like we've got to get to that point. How do we get to that point? How do we bring those young, the young and the older people together? And, you know, looking at a generation that has been seeing the cash, you know, everything has been, you know, we have the debit card, the credit cards, but a lot of times we do cash, the kind of cash exchange. So just changing, how are we changing that mindset with the generational differences?
Education.
Okay.
My job as an extension agent is to build programming. So mm-hmm. I build my basic list of programming is school gardens. We run about 6 school gardens right now. If COVID wasn't here, we would have had about 10 this year. It's pretty good because we only started last year, so 6 in 1 year is fairly well to me. Making sure that I have an ag property program and making sure that our community understand what ag property is and how it's plaguing our community. Also having a technology and agriculture program where I go around the schools and teach students about technology and agriculture and showing them mm-hmm. and careers in agriculture so they know that, you know, you can literally do everything in agriculture. You know, you want to do finance, you can do it in agriculture, you know. Computer technology, agriculture, you know, science, computer science or engineering, you can do it, some based in agriculture. So making sure that they know that agriculture is just not being in the field, you know, picking cucumbers or pole beans, you know, it's a wide open world. Yeah, and we are working on community gardens and gardening. So we have the student garden, the demonstration garden that we have down here behind the farmer's market. That's where we do all our demonstrations at. So we have all different styles of growing, so just different, showing different styles of growing, making sure that we show just different systems that we have, so with irrigation systems and, you know, we're expanding now to animal rotating and how small farmers can use, can get animals, maybe like on an acre or two. How can you, like, on a homesteading style? That's a program that I'm currently building is, you know, homesteading. A lot of our people don't know what homesteading really is. It's basically you know, doing everything for yourself. So, you know, growing all of your meat and your vegetables, and making sure that you're giving more to the land than you're actually taking. You know, using different practices. Because one thing that I've learned, the things that our people have been doing for hundreds of years is now cutting-edge research, you know, organic research. Now that they've given it a name, it's something that is, you know, is a trend now. But I remember as a kid going and picking up horse manure and putting it in a pile, you know, getting ready to fertilize the garden. And, you know, now we're doing research on, you know, using animal fertilizers and when is a great time to use them, not to use them, and all kinds of stuff, you know. So I just think our people just brilliant, you know. And, you know, the smallest things that we see is huge in the world.
Yes, sir. So I'm definitely listening to you. So helping each other is one of the things. And you mentioned, was it ag? Did you say ag farming or something? You mentioned something in talking about some people don't know about that. I'm not sure if you were saying ag farming. You're saying a lot of people don't know. Homesteading.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes, sir.
Yeah. So yeah. Basically just farming on a smaller, manageable scale, you know. It's cost efficient. Mm-hmm. And you can be ran and supported by one or two people, you know. And you can raise your family off of it. So model building, system building, that's what I'm all about. Because I feel like that's, you know, we've been disconnected from for so long, understanding cycles and understanding systems and how they work. So I feel like if you understand, start to look into systems and understand how they work, you'll better understand your, you know, whatever you're doing, the main objective or goal.
Okay. Yes, sir. And I know when you were saying bartering, and I think I had heard you mention that, you know, a lot of the farmers at this point use a cash to carry type of system. So in moving from the cash to cashless society, we have to start thinking differently with bartering. And I don't know how are people going to deal with, because we're accustomed to cash, you know, what are some of these things in learning how to barter and everything that we're going to be able to do?
One thing is learning the value of, you know, what are you doing, the product mm-hmm. that you have. most people try to, you know, go ahead and make an even trade or whatever that they have. Understanding that the cash is only, you know, it only has so much value. You still have social value. You still have, you know, your value with the connection with people is more important than just money. So if you have a great connection with somebody, or if you don't even have to know them, if you have something that they want and you just got to communicate, you know, that's what I've been trying to get our community to do. And I'm still pushing for us to have a communication course for our whole community, because a lot of people do not know how to communicate. So, you know, for many people, that is weird.
Andrea.
Yes, sir.
We have our first caller. Dr. Ridgely's in the queue.
Excellent. All right. definitely. Let's bring Dr. Richley on.
Assalamu alaikum, Dr. Richley.
Alaykum salam. Okay. Of course, you know, I'm traveling. We just delivered to Atlanta and Newark staple goods. You put on the Southeastern freight. Two things the brother said that I'm going to comment on. He just recently said about a barter system where you trade directly with the producers. The key word in that is producer. If you don't have anything, if you're not producing anything, if you're not making anything, then you cannot trade with anybody for what they have. To have a barter society, a barter economy, you must have an economy. You must be a producer. You cannot be just a consumer because you don't have nothing to trade. You have to be a producer. Now, the other point that he brought out, which is so important, I hope we didn't miss it. He said that we are now, they're studying and making a name for what we used to do on a natural tip 40, 50, 60 years ago. We used to do that. But guess what? It was the children of the farmers who went away to school, to college, that came back and said, we need to get involved with agribusiness. We need to get involved with cash crops. We need to get loans from the U.S. Department of Agriculture so we can get bigger, so we can make more money. You know, we're tired of just getting, you know, a living from day to day, year to year. We want to get big time like the white farmers. So they said, look, let's we got land, so let's hawk our land, use it as collateral. It's a capital. It's a capital asset. Let's use this asset so we can get more, get equipment, so we can expand. But the U.S. Department of Agriculture said, okay, you want to get into to commercial cotton and corn and peanuts, soybeans, but you got to give up your little hog operation, your little cow operation, your little chicken operation. Now, because we don't want you divided up your time on those little operations, but guess what? Those little operations provided the manure, the fertilizer for the farm, the cows, the chickens, the hogs, in particular the cows and the chickens. That was great manure fertilizer for the land. Now they're talking about all this rotation with the animals and blah, 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 blah. That's what we do. But the U.S. Department of Agriculture said, you black man, if you want to get involved with the big programs, we're not going to loan you the money if you don't get rid of your chickens, if you don't get rid of your hogs, if you don't get rid of your cows, we're not going to loan you the money. So then the black farmers, listening to their children who went away to college and the U.S. Department of Agriculture extension agents, they stopped doing all those things that you were talking about now, and then now they're trying to bring back into vogue and give it a whole new name called organic farming. When the young people left the farm, didn't want to work on the farm no more, that was the end of organic farming. And then they put all these chemicals out there that they brought back from World War II. They made bombs out of the nitrate, like the one that blew up in Beirut. Now they come back with the sodium nitrate and make fertilizer out of it to replace the manure, because they told you to get rid of your cow, to get rid of your chickens. And now look at where we are now. They're doubling back, going back to subsistence agriculture, homesteading. Want to have one cow here, a couple of chickens here, do a little crops here, a little vegetable crops here. You know, then we trade one another barter. That's what we did before them. They came in and came with that bullshit and got us tricked into that crap. Thank you, my brother. So you lived long enough to know what you was looking at while you was living, and you know now that you're in this other arena that it was. They pulled us away from what now they're turning around and talking about. And now we got to go to some class to learn what our great-great-grandparents did, because they broke us away from that.
And you
Thank
don't.
Thank you very much, my brother.
No problem. You don't have to go to no class. You don't. As I look back on it, like I said, I've been doing research with professors since I was 13 years old. Agriculture and research is the only thing that I know. And not only that, my family is deep into history. My family, my great-great-grandfather was given land in the late 1890s, given a large tract of land in Macon County, one of the largest tracts of land that a black man has ever received, you know, ever owned. And that land later became, you know, the community farm when the farmers and other farmers were displaced from the Tuskegee, which known now as the Tuskegee National Forest. So, you know, I come from heirs' property. I come from large tracts of land. I come from seeing what these systems did to our people. I come from working with the Federation of Settlement Cooperative and seeing, you know, the things the USDA have done and the things that forestry contractors have done to forestry landowners and all of these things. So that's why I said my main thing that I want you all to take away today is our focus needs to be reimagining agriculture. What is agriculture to us? And not what it is to everybody else, you know what I'm saying? Like, we have, like, this is our total essence, you know, the ground, the land, the soil. Everybody else, and I want people to stop calling it dirt because it's not dirt. That is life. Everything about it is living. And that's how we got to look at it, you know. That's how we look at us. We got to look at each other. Every part about us is life. And that's our gift. That brown skin that you have, that is your gift. It comes with genes. It comes with generations of codes in your DNA to direct you to where you need to be. Like, it's no coincidence that I was a farm boy born in Tuskegee, Alabama. And the things that I'm doing now.
Are you still on, Dr. Ridgely?
Yes, I am.
You might have to mute your phone because I hear your noise in the background.
Okay, well, mute my phone.
Okay. Yes, sir.
Yeah, but it's no
coincidence. I'm sorry, brother. Go ahead.
No problem. It's no coincidence why I'm doing the things that I'm doing. It's no coincidence that you all are doing the things that you're doing. Your journey has led you to this point, and it's only going to get better because of cooperation. A lot of people don't understand, you know, everybody is all about competition, and that's one part of evolution. But the other part is cooperation, you know, coming together, sharing resources, looking out for each other, literally a village raising a child, you know. So those are the things, and those are principles that I was raised upon, you know. So those are the things that I want to bring to everybody, all those little kids that's never seen a chick before, you know, or when they first realize that strawberries don't come from the grocery store, they come from the ground. I love that look on their face. It's like, what? You know? And then they start asking questions. So if I grow this, then I really don't have to pay for it. Like, no, you pay for the seed. And the seed, you know, seeds are cheap and you can get how many strawberries you want. Sell them to somebody else. Like, yeah. Like, that's how the system works. And now they're thinking in their mind, oh, everything don't come from the grocery store, you know. It's systems, it's cycles, it's processes into all of this.
Yes, sir.
And if they could click, you know, it's mind-blowing.
Yep. And Sister Angela, we got two more calls in the line with questions. Should I bring them on?
Oh, excellent. Yes, sir. Thank you. Yes, sir.
Caller with the last four digits, 6050. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Hi, this is Patrick calling you from Toronto. Can you hear me?
Your question?
Yeah, two quick things. Number one, as far as cash and cashless, the one big drawback of cashless systems is that you don't really, depending on the system itself, you don't really have anonymity. Meaning that your transactions are being monitored for the most part. The good thing with cash is that if you have $20 on you, the only way I can get it from you is to take it from you or for you to give it to me. If you have $20 in a bank account and we're doing credit card transactions or transactions digitally, they can stop you from getting it. If I have access to the system, I can stop you from getting your money. I can get access to your money without you actually giving it to me. Or I can stop you from transacting because everything is digital. So that's kind of a few of the important pros and cons of cash versus cashless. And then when you talk cashless, you have to talk what kind of cashless. I mean, you know, whether you're talking digital currencies, and there's a lot of different types now, and then you have to worry about whether they're centralized or decentralized, because decentralized will at least give you some freedom. Centralized will just put you back in the system where you are now, with greater the state having greater control over your money, over where you go, any where you spend money. They will know what you spend it, how you spent it, when you spent it, and that kind of thing. So those things need to be taken into consideration. And the brother that was just talking, I think one of the important things that he said was about farming, is that we need to imagine a new way of farming and agriculture. We need to figure out what it means to us. And the same thing, I think, applies with money. What does it mean for us? A lot of people think that the U.S. dollar is the only currency that's in the U.S. It's not. Like, if you go to Ithaca, New York, they have something called the Ithaca Hour. And it's worth, I know a while ago it was worth 10 U.S. dollars, and it's a currency that they use just in the town of Ithaca, especially during turbulent times. And there's another town in Washington State that does the same thing. It's a few other places that do the same thing. In Washington State, they use a currency that was made out of wood, and they still have it, and they're thinking about using it again if times really get tough just in that town. So those were my comments.
Yes, and I worked in near that city that used wood as currency. I worked on a farm named Penn River Farm and Cidery in Chimacum, Washington. It was an organic farm who also made cider.
Yep.
So, and that's another thing. So with those that wooden currency, they even took it further as using it with food stamps. They would, you would go to a station at the farmer's market. They would give you the token, and you would use them at the farmer's market. And then the farmer would go back and get, use those tokens in the city during that time, or use, get money in exchange for those tokens. So, I've seen it used many different ways.
I mean, that's a great point. Think about the possibilities of doing something like that within our community. Also, wanted to ask you a quick question. Are you aware of all of these towns that are for sale in the United States? There's a lot of little one-horse towns, and they're all, a lot of them are for sale.
Definitely.
Some of them have buildings. Some of them have buildings, and some of them don't. I mean, I'm just thinking, because when you start talking about agriculture, and those kind of things, being in closer proximity to where the food is and that kind of thing, it kind of comes to mind, these towns where people could really take it, just move in and take it over and build it up. And that all kind of goes in with the same conversation. But just wanted to get your thoughts on all of that.
Yeah,
and
definitely.
Thank you very much for your comments and your call, Brother Patrick. I'm going to put you back in the queue. And you can go ahead and address that if you'd like to. Brother Terrence, and we have another person in the queue that has another question.
Yeah, definitely. Land is the best thing to invest in. If you have the opportunity to invest in a town, you can basically, do what you want to establish there. That's the great opportunity of being in African American communities, because you can be so creative. We just started a business called the Garden of Tuskegee. The Garden of Tuskegee is basically a partner. It's built a form people, myself, who my degree is in agribusiness, my minor is in farm entrepreneurship, and my concentration is in education. My other partner is Jasmine Ratliff. She has a PhD in integrated public policy. Our other partner is Monye Chavers. She's getting her PhD currently in international integrated public policy. And our last partner is Mr. Marquez James, who has his degree in plant and soil science. So basically what we're doing is we're taking all of the research, the resources that we've learned over the last, what, maybe 10 years, and bringing them to our community. So that's community kitchen, that's community office space. One of the difficulties right now in our community is making sure people have copies of their IDs so they can make sure they actually can vote. So we want to do stuff like that, make sure, like I said, create places of peace, agritourism, places that you can go and get a meal in Tuskegee after right now it's 8 o'clock since COVID hit. Without COVID, it's about 10 o'clock. You only have about one gas station open in McDonald's. But now McDonald's closed, I think it's at 10, and don't open back up till 6. So you don't really have anything open at after 8 now or 10. So making sure we have somewhere to go and get something to eat, making sure we have something healthy. Like I said, I've been farming all my life, so right now we're starting a pasture-raised chicken project that I also partnered with a farmer that I had him start last year. So he's going to start, you know, working on how can we sell these chickens to the community, what's the most cost-efficient way, you know. We also do these things called feastables in our community where we give all of our produce that we create and we grow at the student garden. We give that produce to the community, and we cook a meal and give that to the community also. That just encourages them to come and support the farmer at the farmer's market, and then also introducing them to new crops that you could you can get from some of the farmers at the farmer's market, and recipes and showing you how you can cook these new crops. Business, building business plans. We don't have anywhere that you can help you or a hub that can help you. You can do that. I also created a organization called the Movement 46. It's basically a community hub organization where you just put all send all of your events and posters and everything to this one organization, and they make sure they blast it out to the community. And also we help crowd volunteers for projects. So we just had a project downtown Tuskegee. They're creating a pocket park in the square. It's like in the center of town. So, and we also help put up murals and donate to the Parks and Rec and have back to school jams and just different stuff in the community. Just trying to make a central location for all of us.
Yes, sir. Mr. Andre, can I bring on the next caller?
Yes,
Mr.
sir,
Andre?
Please. Yes, sir.
Okay.
I'm right here. Yes, sir, please.
Caller with the last four digits, 5597. What's your name and where are you calling from?
5597.
That's you.
I saw that. I didn't realize I had punched the one button. But
what's your name and where are you calling from?
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm Sister Kim Muhammad from St. Louis, Missouri, mock number 28. I was thinking about the farmland that you was mentioning, because that's what we were supposed to be doing, is just buying some land and building our own community. So what states are you talking about? Maybe we can go and check out some land that's for sale and try to do something, or see if we can do anything. My brother,
it was a couple in Georgia.
Yeah, we were looking in Georgia, too. Okay, so what part of Georgia?
I don't know for sure. I think it was a small town. I think it was around 1.5, between $1.5 and $2.5 million. So they have little pocket towns like that all around America.
Okay. Okay, so we'll just keep checking because we do want to be close to our people too. We don't want to be out
in the middle. Large tracts of land.
And I was just thinking when I was in Africa in 1994, that's what they did, a lot of bordering, you know. And then when my son went to college, you know, he would get his hair cut, you know, for something that he had, you know. So that's how our people do anyway. We border a lot, you know. So, and that's the way we go. I mean, that's the way we roll, because a lot of times you don't have money to exchange, but your service for my service, and it don't necessarily have to be a service. It might just be something that you have that I want. You know, what do I have to do to get that? Or it might be a service that you have. So that's exciting to me to be able to do that, because a lot of this, America is falling, so we're going to have to find another avenue in order to get things in amongst each other. But I'm sorry, I didn't mean to crush the one, but thank you for coming on and everything that you're saying. I'm really enjoying it, and I appreciate what you say. You're in agriculture, but you are
I'm the extension agent.
Oh, okay. So that's beautiful. So, brother, keep on doing what you do and teaching the children, the babies, because, yes, we all need to know. And I'm glad you say from the baby up to the older, because I still need to know as well. So thank you for coming on, and I'm enjoying this.
No problem.
Thank you for your question, Sister Kim. And Sister Andrea, she is the last of the callers, and we're down to 4 minutes.
All right. Brother Terrence, you have just given so much valuable information, and all of the things that you're doing. Is there a way that anyone in the audience that would want to connect to learn more about what you're doing in Tuskegee, and what are some of the things that we can learn and do in our communities based off of some of the experiences and the work that you're doing? Can you give information out for us?
Yes. You can go to the Movement 46 on Facebook to see all the projects and programs that we're involved with. Right now we're doing COVID testing. We're doing the Pocket Park, and we'll be putting murals up throughout the city soon. You can add me on Facebook at Terrence Showtime Jackson. You can also contact me by email at tjackson2@tuskegee.edu. Yeah, that's about it. We'll be having our YouTube channel up for the Garden of Tuskegee very soon. We've been, you know, cleaning up the farm, building our chicken coop and our chicken tractor. So probably in the next month or so, we'll have a YouTube channel up, and I'll definitely share that information.
Yes, sir. Thank you so much. I mean, you have definitely given us plenty to think about as far as expanding our thoughts on what this cashless society can look like and the things, the alternatives that we have. So thank you so much.
No problem. Thanks for having me. This was great. This was amazing. Lord,
I've really been real stressed, down and out, losing ground. Yeah. Although I am black and brown, problems got me pessimistic. Brothers and sisters keep messing up. Why does it have to be so damn tough? I don't know where I can go to let these ghosts out of my skull. My grandma passed, my brother's gone. Fair tire, but Lord, I ask you to be my force and truth.
down to Holly Springs. Razadon and Baba, they went down to Peachtree. Headliner, I challenge you to a game of horseshoes. A game of horseshoes!
Now I see the importance of history. While my people